Bonjour à tous, c'est un épisode en anglais que je vous propose aujourd'hui. J'accueille George Simons qui va nous parler de l'utilisation du jeu dans des contextes d'interculturalité. Comment le jeu peut-il amener les gens à se rencontrer et à mieux se connaître? Je vous souhaite une très bonne écoute. Hello George Simons.
Yes.
Welcome on Homo Ludens. Can you tell us who you are and what you are doing?
Well, my name is George Simons. I was born in the USA of grandparents who were immigrants from Poland and Austria. And I have lived the last 25 years in the south of France, one of the best choices I ever made. What I do for a living is I am a consultant and trainer in the intercultural field. And what is particularly interesting to me is for the past 26 or so years, I have been creating intercultural games under the label of diversity, wisdom about different things, different people. And I'm very much interested in that these days, and particularly seeing how games can bring people together and resolve potential social conflicts and misunderstandings. So that's my 82 years in short.
And what are the goals of your company, Diversophy?
What we do is basically work on intercultural understanding and competence. And as I mentioned, we have well over 100 games, and I think there's games in about 13 or 14 different languages at the moment.
And could you explain us what is interculturality?
Well, that's a good question. Basically, what we're trying to do is create the ability for people to get to know, work with, collaborate with, and become creative with people who are different from themselves. This has been a human challenge for ages, but it's particularly highlighted now, given the global environment in which we work in, the fact that we are dealing with people from different cultures, not only far away from us and via the internet or social networks, but also in everyday life. Our world is becoming more and more diverse. And at the same time, there's a threat on the horizon, and that is the fear we have of each other, which has led to a lot of populism in politics in the last several years, and feels like a very dangerous tendency. So to me, one of the missions that I have is to make these games useful for people to not only learn about each other, but connect with each other face to face as they play and reduce what we would call the us versus them attitude and behaviors that are so easy to come by today.
And what is more precisely the job of a cross-cultural trainer?
Well, basically, it's a very diverse thing in itself. For example, I may be called upon to teach cross-cultural communication, negotiation, management, how to work in a global team with people from diverse backgrounds and diverse locations. So, fundamentally, it's mostly classroom or training room activity, though some of it takes place now online, and I'm moving to some things in that direction. But the face-to-face encounter of people and learning together is an extremely important part of what I feel that I do. I teach courses not only for private and public organizations, but I've been invited to teach for management schools and universities and so on in the process of working for interculturality and helping young people learn how to be more culturally competent as they go out into this very diverse world and workplace.
And how did you come upon using games in your work?
Well, it's a long story, and I generally send people to my website, which is www.diversophy.com, and there's a whole history there. But fundamentally, I was teaching in a university, and I was also responsible for the student staff, who were the senior students that were helping the younger students in the dormitories and residences of the university. And they faced various situations that they needed to learn about, needed to learn how to intervene. So I created a board game at that point in which they would encounter those situations by landing on different spaces of the board. And then they would have to explore them and discuss them with each other and come up with good answers. That's the dynamic that has continued to this day in the games that I create. However, we've left the board game, and the games consist largely of sets of cards of five different kinds and choosing mechanism like dice or randomizing the cards. That was something that happened when we realized that trainers couldn't take five big box games together if they had 30 people in a training session, but they could take one box of cards that would serve 30 people. So it's been a developmental thing over the ages. After I got done with the university, the diversity movement began in the about 2000 in the USA. And at that point, there was a report called US 2000 Diversity. And at that point, we created games about diverse situations in the US workplace and US culture. And that was the first really published box game that happened. That was quite popular. But as I say, we ran into this problem of it's too big to schlep a mess of them around. So we created more community, larger versions of the games, which could be played by larger groups. And today you can take one of our games and play with four people, or you can get a version that you can use for 2,000 people. And I've done both. So it's been a matter of development of style and technique in the flexibility of the game, but fundamentally the idea of getting people to respond to situations and questions has been the essential part of the game. We give people information about the culture to react to. We take people and we put them in situations where something positive or negative might happen in a different culture. We put people into situations where we ask them to compare how things are done in one culture with how they're done in their own culture. And we give them situations in which they have to choose what might be the best behavior in a certain situation or context when dealing with another culture. And finally, we also have some very factual questions about different cultures, what happens, history, the behaviors and the activities of people in different cultures. So fundamentally, we've created a game that people play for about an hour and discuss the results and a little debriefing with each other. But the great value of the game we see is not just the information they gain about different cultures, but the face-to-face encounter that allows them to see each other as real people rather than us versus them, as I mentioned earlier.
Yes, you said that games enable to bring people together. And are there other interesting things about using games in a cross-cultural context?
Well, first of all, you know, the benefit of using games is games provide us with an artificial world. In other words, the rules of the game, the boundary of the game, it's like going to another place, okay, in which your old everyday rules may not apply, and you're given the opportunity to risk new behaviors, to try new ideas, to interact in different ways. So the first and most important thing I find about games is they let you be in another world where you can interact more freely with each other and in what you do. Now, that has some real benefits in the sense that what it does is allows us to learn more simply because new things will strike us more effectively. The element of chance, I mean, we roll dice and draw cards. The element of chance inspires us to have a higher level of receptivity or a higher level of awareness when we're playing a game. Often the playing of the game also asks us to imitate or mime or step into someone else's shoes and behave as someone else would. So we're allowed to try on new behaviors that way. Sometimes games also help us they move us around, okay? We get new behaviors that we're allowed to try. So our old patterns get disrupted and we experience some new things in the process. So a lot of there is lots of study about games, all the way back to Homo Ludens, which is the name of your program, where we identify the fact that play is a very, very important part of learning, not just for children, but for adults as well. So what people do in games is often remembered far better, and relationships that people create in games often break through the boundaries that have restricted them somewhere in the past.
And are there cultures which are more willing to use games at work in a professional context?
Well, that's true, although what we're seeing is almost a worldwide adoption of games as actually more, we've coined the word serious gaming for what's going on, both in business and in the workplace around games. And people have found that they're getting much more accustomed to games. When I started out this, it was very clear that gaming seemed to be, oh, well, that's play, that's not work. Okay. And now what we're discovering is that the best kind of work is the work that we have an attitude of play toward. And frequently the games that are used in the workplace, in the marketplace, and so on, are much more effective than the traditional kind of learning or communication that we've had. The games that we play are open doors to new things. Now, I've encountered cultures where people are still leery about games. These are not very serious. I've also encountered cultures where sometimes gaming is not only not seen seriously, but games of chance, you know, just rolling dice in certain groups for religious or philosophical reasons may be avoided as something evil or something that one should not engage in. So there will be rules or there will be cultural values, conscious or unconscious, in which people will find that they are more or less resistant to games. Cultures may vary in whether they'll play games, how long they'll play games, how sincerely they'll play games, how much they'll get into it. And a number of other factors can also appear as people experience games and their values come to the foreground. And as I said, one of the great things about the games is they do challenge values because they put us in this artificial world where we've just said, okay, those are the rules of the other world you live in. These are the rules of the game. Let's play by the rules of the game and see what we get.
Mm. Yeah, okay. You are using mostly cards. Would you like to try other kinds of games?
Well, you know, I have a lot of activities that I use, some of them that could be called games and some of them that are just, I guess, activities. But the cards actually are instigate activities on the part of the players. However, I've seen lots of games that address issues in real life. That are board games or are online games, for example. I have not ventured very deeply into online games, though I have the possibility of doing my games online, mostly because I've found that with my limited resources, the most important thing I can do is get people together to play face-to-face. Now, as technology advances, you can also do things face-to-face, like we're having this conversation as if it were face-to-face online. So I'm exploring how that sort of thing may be done with the sort of content and focus issues and values that I've been trying to put into our diversity games over the years. So when it comes to intercultural training, yes, there are lots of games that people can do, and people can invent their own games. You know, one of the games that, for example, that I've used in a group of people is I have a set of labels on that are on rubber bands that a person can put on their head, and on the label is the name of the kind of person they are, their nationality, their ethnicity, their occupation, or something of that sort. And people have then a little piece of paper on their back, and people look at each other's names and write down what they feel are their feelings about this, their stereotypes about this, and so on and so forth. So a group will do this for maybe 10 or 15 minutes, and then the people don't know who they are. They haven't seen the label that's on their forehead. So then they sit down and they take the paper off their back and they read what other people think of them, what other people's stereotypes of them were, and then they need to guess their own identity. And I found that this game is utterly incredible because people almost always discover their identity. And the lesson that's involved in that, of course, is that stereotypes are so strong and so widespread that we participate in them very unknowingly. And this brings that realization to the fore that, wow, how much do I stereotype people before really getting to know them? So that's the example of another game that I've used in intercultural training and diversity training in the past. There are dozens of them. I collected at one point with several other people a book of 50 exercises. You know, most of them could be described as games for intercultural learning. And I, about 2 years ago or 3 years ago, another group of people did the same thing. So there's lots of tools out there, and people can become creative about it. In this past meeting that we had with the Society for Intercultural Education, Training, and Research, a congress that we held in Belgium, in Leuven, what happened was that we had a two-day gamification course, and it wound up with people forming small groups for the creation of new games that they felt would be useful. And thus far, in the follow-up, one of the groups has conducted a game for about a week about saying no in different cultures. And I expect that we'll be going on forward with other kinds of exploration from these groups. It's a little slow at the moment because it's summertime in Europe, you know. July and August, we just sit at home and sweat. I'm so happy that this is a wonderful voice experience between you and me, because I'm sitting here in my t-shirt and shorts because it's so hot here in the south of France. So luckily, no images.
No images. You are using games in cross-cultural workshops. Can you tell us a bit more about what is going before and after the game?
I think there's two ways to go about this. One is that the games that we create can be played by people anywhere at any time. All they need is the materials and the facilitator guide. However, when I do workshops, the design then incorporates the games for the specific learning objectives of the organization or the company or the group that I'm working with. So, for example, about 2 years ago, I had the opportunity to, a French company was sold to a U.S. American company. And this French company had offices various places in France and Brazil and so on. So we created a course about working with U.S. Americans for the HR people and the managers of the French company that was being sold to the U.S. company. In the process of that, then, we explored the values, the stories, the behaviors, and so on that differed between the French organization and the U.S. organization, and played a game on U.S. culture with the French participants. This was one of our diversity games. So it what happens in the culture is that it's, or what happens in the workshop is that we come to the point where we want to explore on a very practical basis what happens between people. So we spend a little time familiarizing people with the game, a little 10-minute introduction about how to play it. And then people play for 40 minutes, 50 minutes, an hour, up to an hour and a quarter usually. And then we will have a debrief about what they learned and what they wanted to apply and so on and so forth. So then the game both helps people to, in a sense, apply what they've been learning throughout the day, as well as raises questions about what they want to learn next or what they need to improve or and so on in their perception of the other culture and how they are going to interact with it. Mm-hmm. For another one, for example, I currently have a client who is involved in the Belt and Road project of China. And they're very interested in training Chinese managers and enterprises and workers in cultures around the world where, well, not around the world, but on the Belt and Road project as China seeks to go westward into Europe, into Africa, and so on with their plans for this marketing and development effort, which is called Belt and Road. We see a significant role for the games that we have, and of course, a significant challenge in defining and translating the materials needed for people to play these games in various cultures. So it fits integrally into the kind of work we do in cross-cultural training.
And which advice could you give to someone who wants to use games in a cross-cultural context?
Good question. I teach a facilitation course in the university where they've been. I have two universities who are partners with me in the development of games. One has developed three games, and another one is on its fourth game. And basically, knowing how to facilitate can be helpful as far as our games are concerned. But basically, what a person should do, of course, is try the game in a safe context and see what their role will be. Most of the time, the people who lead games are basically facilitators. And that's an important thing to remember. We have a good facilitator guide for our games, and most games come with instructions about how to use them and how to apply them if you're using them in teaching or some other kind of environment. But basically, important thing is that a facilitator is a person who it does exactly that, makes it easy for people to play, makes the game go smoothly. And I know some people are afraid of leading games, especially games like the ones that have lots of information in them. They don't need to be the experts on the information. What they need to do is be the people who can help people explore, play, connect with each other, and make sure that the rules of the game which enable people to do that are well observed. So I guess the first thing I'd like to say is don't be afraid of games. You don't have to be a master gamer of any sort. You just need to be a good teacher or facilitator when you use the games. There are enormous numbers of games to choose from. One just goes online and sees all kinds of stuff and various websites of gaming and so on. How to use them, it depends on your learning objectives. I mean, for our own games, for example, we have most of our games have about 200 to 250 cards, which cannot be played in 40 minutes. But I encourage the people who are training to make sure that they pick out the information that they want to use from these card sets that really suits their learning objectives. What is it that they're trying to have the people in their group experience, learn, exchange, discuss with each other? So it's I guess number one is don't be afraid to use games. Number two is make sure that you pick games that will support the learning objectives that you have for your group or your group has for itself or your client has for the situation.
Okay. We arrive at the end of this episode. Do you want maybe to add something that we have forgot?
Okay, good question. I guess what I'd really just like to add is encouragement to be creative, encouragement to take risks. Find fellow people who you can explore new ideas with. Make your organization or your part in it a kind of place where new ideas and creative exercises and activities can address issues, tasks, challenges that you're facing in new and fresh ways. This is basically what gaming does. And I think from an intercultural point of view, I realize that we have constructed worldviews, meta-récit, as they say in French sociology, meta-narratives that we live by, that we take as our reality, and we don't realize that these have been socially constructed. And so gaming and playing is a way for us to not only see the limits of our worldviews, of these meta-narratives, but helps us to change them, correct them, create new ones. And that's the real challenge going forward in a world where we see politics and competition and all kinds of issues that are painful to our humanity. And it's time to do something about that. So that's my sermon for the end of this thing. And I'm hoping that people will take the time. You need time to play. In other words, you have to stop doing some of the things you're doing. Give yourself some empty space to play and use that to become creative. Unfortunately, a lot of people really are trying to do their job. They put their nose to the grindstone, as we say in English, and keep working on, and don't have the leisure to follow other instincts that will come to the fore if you take time to be quiet by yourself or in fun company from time to time. So for those who are the workaholics of the world, gaming and thinking about gaming and using games is part of the therapy for that.
Great, thank you. The last two questions. Yes. Which game would you like to recommend to us?
Well, my own game, of course, and our highest version of that game, which exists in about 6 or 7 languages now, is called Diversity Cultural Competence. And it's sort of the basic game for getting to know yourself. What are the ways to know yourself? What are the ways to know others? What are the things that will get you from being scared and in your shell to being curious and taking in lots of the richness and possibilities that exist in the world around you. So if there's anyone I'd like to recommend, I'd like to start with that one, and then you can have all the rest you want after that. But cultural competence diversity is, I think, the ground and the groundbreaking part of our work with intercultural gaming. There's lots of stuff out there, and be curious, find what you can. But that's a starting point I would recommend.
Okay. And if we want to know a bit more about yourself, diversity, or games used in a cross-cultural context, where can we find more information?
Well, first of all, you just go to our website, which is www.diversofi.com. So that's D-I-V-E-R-S, like people who jump in the water, and O-P-H-Y, like the end of philosophy.com, Diversofi. And there you'll find all our games and the background and the history and lots of other resources that will help you in intercultural work. And, of course, anybody who wants to reach me can also just write to diversofi@gmail.com, and I usually answer my mail.
Okay. Thank you very much, George Simons.
Thank you, Matthew.
Merci d'avoir écouté jusqu'au bout. N'oubliez pas de vous abonner et de parler du podcast autour de vous. À très bientôt.